hold on for a second. There's a giant, terrifying spider I have to murder.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus. It's looking at me. Hold on. I need to get a fly swatter or something. Ah!
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. With me again, sick at home, Keith Foster from San Diego, California.
That's right. I have a little bit of a cold, a little bit of the sniffles. So if I sound weird and start making strange mucusy noises, I apologize. But you're this far in, so you've got to commit to the whole episode. And with me, as always, from Los Angeles, California, it's Cassidy Robinson.
Yes, it is. You were actually, now, maybe this is how you got your cold. You were actually just in Orange County a couple days ago doing Disneyland again.
Uh-huh, yeah. Our friends Kate and Ashley, friend of the show, she was on the show once. Other Ashley, not my wife, different Ashley. They met us in Anaheim, and we went to Disneyland for a couple days. It's been a while since I've done like a multi-day trip, so that was kind of fun. But it was chilly as a motherfucker.
Yeah, and we're experiencing like, some weird cold weather for Southern California, which is to say it's like 65 degrees.
No.
Instead of the regular... 98
it's
degrees.
Been in the 50s. The other day it got down to like 38 degrees at night, and I woke up and there was frost on my car.
Right, which is some bullshit.
Yeah, that's insane. That is like 98% of the reason I moved to Southern California was to not deal with this bullshit. So I'm blaming the weird cold front for my ailments.
That's probably scientifically accurate. The next day, after you guys did that, me, Kate, and Ashley went to go see the Science Space Museum.
Oh, I heard about this story. I heard it from their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this whole parking thing, and then your phone died, and you being you, the least rational human on the planet, you don't even have, like, a phone charger.
The most rational person on the planet. Definitely the most rational person in that whole argument. But what? I don't want to, like, relitigate the...
No. I said irrational.
Yes, no, I and I was correcting you.
Oh, Cassidy.
Yes, it was kind of a nightmare scenario as far as just because meeting up and trying to find each
other. Yeah, because you didn't want to pay for parking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
So you expected them to drive like a half hour out of their way to come and pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would have to drive a half an hour out of their way again, and they had to drive back to Las Vegas that night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would have been more like 25 minutes and probably 15 minutes on the way back because it would have been night. But yes.
Yeah, that makes a big difference when you're driving 5 hours.
All that matters is that everything I thought would happen happened. So to start out with, my phone dies on the way there because I'm using my GPS.
Hey, if you think that's going to happen, get a fucking phone charger.
I have one. There's a problem with my phone right now where I have to like wrap my phone around the charger cord around it and rubber band it so that it'll actually charge or else it doesn't do it by itself.
Uh-huh. Sounding real rational.
The one in my car is broke currently, so I tried to find them. My phone died right before I sent them a message of where I was. And so I'm wandering around the science museum, hoping that I just run into them. And then once I realize it's too big and there's too many people, that may never happen, I decide to go to a gift shop to see if they have a charger. Because I asked a few like tellers or whatever, like, hey, do you just have a charger I can use for a second? Being super nervous about it because I know that as soon as if they ever like watch me like have to charge my phone, it's going to look like I'm trying to break their cord and they're not going to be super into that.
Oh my God.
So, because I have to be so intense with it when I do it. So then I buy this like battery operated charger thing, hoping that I can, you know, and there's no way I can test it because again, it'll look like I'm trying to break the product and it's non-refundable. I buy it for like $15 and it immediately breaks.
So you bought this charger for $15, which was more than the price of parking.
Yes, but it was cash only to park. And I'd actually found a spot.
Oh, God forbid you go get cash.
I actually did find street parking that was relatively close. By this point, that was no longer the problem. The problem was I had no idea where they were.
The problem was they were looking for you.
Yeah, and there was no way I could communicate with them because my phone was dead. So then, after I wasted $15 on a product that immediately broke because it's cheap gift store product, I'm wandering around and I make the decision in my head. I can either go home and just not deal with any of this, or I could ask a stranger if I can use their phone so I can log on to Facebook to use the Facebook Messenger app to find them, which is what I decided to do because I was already in downtown and I was just committed to this debacle. And so the first person I talked to see if I could use his phone, I approach him kind of sheepishly and I say, sorry, could I ask you an awkward question? And then he's like, yeah, he was there with his wife or girlfriend. And I was like,
I guarantee you looked insane.
Can I borrow your phone? I'm trying to find my friends and my phone died and I can't. He's like, oh yeah. So he just puts it to the phone part, you know, just the dial keys. And hands it to me and said, well, this is the part where it's awkward because I have to log into Facebook because I don't know their number off the top of my head.
Oh, no, you didn't.
I did this happen. And so he's
like, you asked a stranger if you could log into their Facebook app?
I did. And it gets better, Keith. It gets better. So he's like, kind of laughing. I can tell at this point, like his wife, girlfriend, whatever it was, beside him was kind of getting annoyed on his behalf.
They think this, there's,
oh, Keith, wait. And then he logs out and then hands me his phone and I go to type in my information into the Facebook app and everything is in Cyrillic. He's Russian. He's random Russian tourist.
Wait, did he speak English?
Yeah, because everyone in the world can speak English except for, we're the only non-bilingual culture.
What, did he have like an accent?
Like a little bit, but I didn't hear it immediately.
Oh my God.
So I'm like trying to navigate through. I'm like, okay, no. Well, goodbye identity, first of all. And I was like trying to navigate through and I'm like, do I hit this? Do I hit this? Because everything's in another language.
Oh no.
Finally, I get to the messenger part and it has a little like call option if it's connected to your phone number. So I call and I'm like, I'm using a stranger's phone right now. Where are you? And eventually I'm able to find them. But I had to be like, okay, I'm gonna log out and try and delete this to the guy. But I couldn't read anything and it wasn't like working immediately, so I'm like, so I just kinda hand it to him and he sort of like shows me that it's not, that my information isn't there anymore. But I left with like this kind of like, I don't know if it did it or didn't do it because it was all in another language.
Trust me, no one wants your identity.
That's probably fair.
No one wants it. You're safe.
So,
you know, except that he's probably a Russian hacker who rigged our election. I start seeing some weird pro-Trump stuff coming out of your Facebook, I'll know it was Mr. Gift Shop.
No, but you might see some Russian skepticism stuff because I'm kind of in that camp.
Yeah, that's enough you being the most insane person.
Well, yeah, all that matters is I saw the big spaceship. It was cool. And then we went to the last bookstore, which I'd never been before. It was also cool, but it was also really, really cold.
I cannot tell you how glad I am that we bailed on this, because we were going to come, mm-hmm. and then I bailed hard. I was like, I'm tired. I don't want to drive an hour and then have to drive 2.5 hours home late at night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I chose correctly.
You chose wisely. Today we're going to be talking about Black Panther, the new Marvel film. At the end of the program, we are also going to be discussing the Cloverfield Paradox for our Netflix homework. We are going to talk about The Discovery, but we're going to cover it next week with, I think, Annihilation comes out. Yeah, I've been looking forward to that one, actually. So
yeah, I downloaded the audiobook, and my goal was to finish it, and I need to. It's like 6 hours long, so.
Oh, that's barely a book. That's like a novella.
I know. Yeah, it's the first one's pretty short.
Okay, I didn't even know it was based on a book, so there you go.
Yeah, it's a whole trilogy, so.
Let's go ahead and get into the movie news.
Movie news. Talk about that movie news.
I'll let you start. What's the first thing you want to cover?
The first thing, this is kind of an old story because it's been a little bit, Tom Hanks is set to play Mr. Rogers in the biopic You Are My Friend.
Mm-hmm.
They announced this back in January, and all I can tell you is that I had a mini heart attack when I saw that Tom Hanks's name was trending on Twitter. I was just like, oh God, no, not Tom Hanks. But it turned out it was trending because of this. So I was like,
right.
Oh, thank God. Oh, Lord. Yeah. So they're making a biopic about Mr. Rogers, and Tom Hanks is going to play him.
Mm-hmm. This is done through Sony TriStar, director Mariel Heller. Before reading this, she directed Diary of a Teenage Girl, but before reading this, I assumed in my head for some reason, like, oh, this is going to be a Disney thing, and now Disney's just going to call Tom Hanks whenever they want him to play some old kind of legendary child star, because he played Disney in that one movie.
Mm-hmm. Which name's escaped. Saving Mr. Banks.
Yes, that one. Which is kind of the case, it's just not through one company, but he is sort of the go-to for, like, avuncular, charming, wholesome old men.
Yeah.
Even that one with the pilot who crashed into the birds, I saw that. Sully.
Yeah, I guess I think that's a little different. I don't think children held Sully Sullenberger up in their hearts like they did Walt Disney or Mr. Rogers.
You don't have the 2011 exclusive Sully Beanie Baby.
I don't.
It's
is that real?
It's worth a lot. No, it is not real.
You're making this up. I mean, there was a Princess Diana Beanie Baby.
Weirder things have happened. I mean, it was just a purple bear with a rose on it, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I figured maybe it was like a white bear with a...
with a captain's like hat or something.
Yeah.
He would probably appreciate that.
Sure.
So, I mean, this makes sense.
I do get him confused with the pilot from Flight, though. Denzel's pilot.
No, that's the one who was on cocaine,
right?
And several substances, but somehow safely landed a plane.
See, in my mind, Sully was on cocaine as well.
No, he was on PTSD.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, yeah. So I think this casting makes sense. Like, they show the side by side in this Hollywood Reporter article. He can do it. He likes to do weird accents nowadays, so he could probably do that one.
My only thing is Tom Hanks is so Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. Like, he's one of the few celebrities left that is, like, sort of larger than life.
That you can really sell a movie on just the name alone.
Yeah, and so I almost think it might have been better to get kind of like an unknown character actor, but I'm sure he'll be fine. You know, he'll be charming and sweet and Tom Hanks about it. But, you know, I'm not going to really get excited about a Mr. Rogers movie unless it's about his, like, years as a sniper, which is why he had to wear those sweaters.
Exactly. That's what I want to know. What? How far are they going to get into this? Like,
oh, I've heard that's an urban legend, actually. But
in the case where the urban legend is more interesting, I say go urban legend. Let's go full on.
They're not going to do that.
What was that movie with Sam Rockwell? About Todd Barris. Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. Let's go full on Confessions of a Dangerous Mind on this. Let's take this to the most ridiculous extremes.
No, I have a feeling this will be pretty by the numbers sort of biopic.
Right.
I don't think it's really anything to get excited about.
There's going to be a Chubby Him moment about him deciding to talk through puppets or something.
Yeah, and then, you know, they're probably going to do like some of the times that Mr. Rogers spoke before Congress, because, you know, those clips that have been circulated a lot lately, mm-hmm. About him being, like, motivational and things like that, which I think is good. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine.
Yeah, probably. I mostly just wanted to talk about whether or not they're going to go into a sniper past.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think that was real.
Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe to join new horror film by Robert Eggers, the director of my favorite film from last year, The Witch.
You mean 2016?
I guess you're right. Yeah, 2016.
2018, brah.
Taking a while to get used to that. It's called The Lighthouse, and it is, I guess, sort of a nautical-themed historical horror film that seems to be Robert Eggers' du jour as far as his take on horror. He was he's still slated to eventually do his reboot of Nosferatu, starring Anya Taylor-Joy again. I don't know which one's going to come out first. This movie, probably, because it's already casting. But just to tie everything together, synchronicity, Willem Dafoe played Max Schreck, the actor in Nosferatu, in that one strange movie from like the late 90s, The Shadow of a Vampire.
Well, he wasn't actually that. Yes, that movie wasn't actually about Nosferatu. It was like a fictional version of Nosferatu. It was a weird
about
movie.
It was a movie about a movie, but it was kind of like a sort of historical revisionist thing.
Yeah, it was like, what if Nosferatu had a real vampire in it? Mm-hmm. I should rewatch that. I remember enjoying it.
Yeah, I've actually, list of shame, never seen it. But I just thought that was interesting because of the whole connection. But yeah, I mean, I'm down. I don't think you've seen The Witch, but...
The Vivitch? No, I haven't yet.
And you... missed out. I mean, especially around Halloween, I think that's like the perfect kind of like October month campfire story kind of horror movie.
All right. Well, I think this last October, I didn't really get to watch a lot of horror movies, so maybe it'll make the cut next year.
For sure. Or anytime, really. But yes, I'm excited about this. I like nautical theme horror. It's not something we see a lot. Even like if you look at like the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Like the one direction they could have went is to make it more, I guess, realistic or really take into a gothic horror territory. Of course, that's not the direction that they went. Instead, they turn it into a big roller coaster ride, which is fun.
Yeah,
but you know,
there's a rich like folklore to the sea and like sea legends and stuff that I think is really cool too. So, and it makes for some cool set pieces. So mm-hmm. Sure, I'm not a huge fan of Robert Pattinson.
Well, Robert Pattinson's it's really interesting. He's had this whole second life. There's the Twilight Robert Pattinson, and I guess kind of by connection the Harry Potter Robert Pattinson.
The YA.
Yeah, Robert YA Pattinson. Robert Pattinson, and then he's had this weird second life in indie film where he's really tied to genre stuff. Like he did that movie The Rover, which was like a grimy, like post-apocalyptic Australian thriller. Then he was in the Cronenberg films recently, and
I heard Good Time was good.
I did too. Yeah, and you know, I just
don't care for him. I'll admit I haven't seen him in a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
I would say the best case for Robert Pattinson is Cosmopolis.
But that's just because you love Cronenberg.
I do. I do love Cronenberg. But the thing that I think Cronenberg does really well with him is he sort of taps into Pattinson's blank slateness. And because Cronenberg movies are so cold and kind of emotionless anyway, he sort of fits in with that milieu. Again, it's more just how he's using Pattinson as a tool rather than like Pattinson maybe directly know what he's doing. But I don't know. Maybe he does.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
All right.
Last story.
This last one is... apparently, they are rebooting Willy Wonka, but this time it's going to be with the director of Paddington.
Yes, both Paddington movies, Paul King. You can go back to our last review to give you an idea how we feel about him. I think this is a really good fit, actually. I think the Tim Burton movie has its fans.
Ugh.
I
hated that movie.
Yeah, to me, that's like a real like turning point of like when I really started to have big problems with Tim Burton.
That movie's gross. It's like obscene. it just grosses me out. Johnny Depp with his weird teeth thing. I don't like it. I don't know. I guess if there has to be another Willy Wonka movie, I think he's the guy to do it. I just don't know that there needs to be another Willy Wonka movie, but whatever. oh, Lord. Oh, here it comes. I just don't know that there needs to be a new Willy Wonka movie, but, you know, grumbly old man rant aside, if they're going to do it, he's a good fit.
Yeah, that would pretty much mirror my sentiments on it exactly. There's an inherent darkness to the sort of Roald Dahl tone, and obviously Tim Burton kind of leaned into that. But that first film certainly has dark moments. I mean, some shockingly dark moments. But it's for the most part, it's kind of about wonderment and optimism. It's kind of buried into this weird sort of Roald Dahl pessimism. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see which way Paul King takes on it. Because he does have a little bit of a satirical voice, even in those Paddington movies.
Yeah, and the thing I like about him, again, we covered all this in our review. I think he's got the right sense of humor and the right sensibility to get that sort of storybook quality.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, this is fine.
Yeah, it's about as good of a choice you could really come up with for something like this.
I mean, it has been, like, what, 15 years since that weird Tim Burton Willy Wonka?
11, 12, something like that. Yeah, because that was, like, 2005?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so, like, 13 years. So, I guess, and if we can forget about that gross monstrosity, sure.
We were able to forget about Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes reboot.
That's true. That's true.
So let's just skip right over that one.
All right.
Okay, we're going to talk about Black Panther now. And
yes,
we have a hot take by a friend of the show, Patrick, from Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational. He wanted to give us his thoughts. So we'll play that now, and then when we come back, we will jump into it.
Since I was not invited on a comic book film, I'm going to give my hot take now on Black Panther. Cassidy, I'm sorry, but Keith, I need like a hot take, like hot take, 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 for that hot take. Hot take, I'll keep it real simple. I enjoyed it a great deal. I brought my wife, who does not go to see movies like this. I'll give you an example. We saw a preview for Solo, and I got really excited and turned to her and said, we need to see that. And she rolled her eyes and said, in pain. She enjoyed it. She stayed awake the entire time. On a film basis, it was good. It had, I think, four acts altogether. It was well acted. It looked really nice, except for something about, like, Marvel's obsessed with the CGI of the rubbery Spider-Man. In Spider-Man Homecoming, you had rubbery T'Challa riding on rhinos at one point. In terms of the Marvel Universe comic book stuff, I really liked it having finally a sympathetic and exciting villain with Michael B. Jordan's character of Killmonger. You had a guy who was charismatic, and you could see from his point of view where, like, some of the things he was saying kind of made a lot of sense. And you could see where a character much more of liberation politics would be appealing in this Wakandan nation with all the superpower has been hidden away and isolated for so long, and it could have done a ton for colonized people. And then at the same time, it was kind of weird that, like, his plan was to do what essentially arms manufacturers have done around the world to destabilize world governments, just throw, you know, high-tech weaponry in the hands of people with military advisors, and things will just go really well, right? Because that's worked so well in decolonized places to liberate groups of people since, you know, the early stages of the Cold War. But still, like, you know, sympathetic. Like, Wakanda probably needed to do more outreach to help out those nations. I thought that was great. Some stuff that I just nitpicky nerd stuff, hot takes that I did not enjoy. Again, old man style, I did not like the length of the film. Too long. Oh my god, too long. Okay, the concept of Michael B. Jordan's character Killmonger sending out those weapons to destabilize all those countries, not really all those countries, what was it, London, New York, and Shanghai, I think, or Hong Kong, were the three places he was going to send the war dogs out to, you know, give everybody vibranium-based weapons and disable. That's big enough of a threat. That's a huge world-level threat. I don't think then we need, like, I know why the filmmaker did it, Ryan Coogler, to have that fight on the train thing, because it was the MacGuffin, where, like, you got to see the vibranium-based train set deep in the heart of Wakanda, so you had to use it, but, like, the idea of, like, just stopping them from having shipments, or, like, I don't know, maybe a good movie as I'm spitballing this would have been, like, T'Challa running around stopping the war dogs from arming these nations. Maybe that would have been a good, exciting thing. But then you wouldn't have seen Wakanda and how awesome Wakanda is. For me as a kid, I love the concept when reading comic books of, like, fictional locations in comic books, especially, like, Wakanda, Latveria, Atlantis, Central City, Coast City from DC. All that stuff always, like, gave me, like, a nerd boner when I saw that. So, like, seeing Wakanda and Afrofuturism on screen was pretty cool. The only other nerd thing I'm going to pick apart in this one that I didn't really super enjoy was I kind of wanted to see Necropolis, the Land of the Dead. I like how they showed it, where, you know, they went tripping and went back and saw the ancestors of the Black Panthers. But I kind of like it being an actual place where, like, all the Marvel Comics, all the bodies of the past Black Panthers are interred. And they go down and they still trip out and they see these, like, scenes of the past. And, like, you get, like, the Black Panther of, you know, 1830 comes back and talks about how he helped fight against colonizers. Or you get the Black Panther of World War II coming, talking about how he fought off the Red Skull. Like, that was always cool stuff, too. But, I mean, you know, you can only do so much in the movie. And, oh, this is really, really stupid, but I wish the war dogs wore their goofy, all-white, like, war dog outfits. In the comic books, they wear, like, all-white Lycra bodysuits, the kind of inverse of the Black Panther, with little dog ear things that are, like, close-cropped, like a Rottweiler, and they have, like, infrared goggles on. They look very cool, especially in contrast to fighting with the Black Panther. That was it. So there's the hot take. Keith, again, give me a hot take intro. Make Cassidy do something. This is Patrick, corresponding from Metro Detroit for Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational. Cassidy, as always, please plug it at the end. Thank you. Goodbye. Hot
take. All right. So, Keith Foster, tell me what happens in Black Panther.
So this movie, it picks up right on the heels of Captain America Civil War. There have been a couple Marvel movies since then, so you have to kind of go back and remember what happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't tie too closely to it, so it's doesn't like hinge on it. But
mostly Civil War.
I think a little refresher is probably good so that you know where T'Challa as a character is at. He is the new king of Wakanda, this fictional African country that's hidden in the mountains of Africa, that through circumstance was able to develop as technologically superior to the rest of the world. And it's hidden, so no one knows it exists. And he's coming back to claim his father's throne. And then hijinks ensue.
Right. I mean, there might be a little bit more than that. Do you want to get into
hijinks?
Michael B. Jordan, what his whole deal is?
Sure. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of spoilery, isn't it? Michael B. Jordan shows up as a sort of mysterious villain who has some connection to Wakanda, and he eventually ends up vying for the throne himself. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bit of a power struggle with these, I think there's like five or six Wakandan clans, and hijinks ensue.
Now, how much did you know about the character of Black Panther and Wakanda and all of this kind of comic booky stuff prior to seeing the movie? Because before this, the only thing I really knew about Black mm-hmm. Panther is he's a king from Africa, but everything I'd ever read him in when I was reading comics regularly, he was always the guest star. You know, he always was coming into somebody else's world. So a lot of this stuff I really didn't know.
Yeah. I'm kind of same with you. I hadn't really read a lot of Black Panther solo stuff. Mm-hmm. Mostly I think he started as a side character in the Fantastic Four. So he sort of follows a similar trajectory as a character to me as Namor. He's a character that I see a lot peripherally, but I don't know a lot of his stories. It sounds like Patrick knows a lot more than we do.
I would imagine.
About the sort of source material.
Right. And there was so much of this stuff that I thought was so, like, specific, like, weirdly specific, that I was like, what came from the comic books and what didn't? So I actually, like, Google image searched, like, a lot of the characters and, like, what Wakanda looked like in the comics and that kind of stuff.
Well, I knew that Wakanda was... is the most culturally advanced nation or scientifically advanced nation in the Marvel universe. Yeah. I know that. I know Black Panther is actually one of the richest comic book characters. He has more money than Tony Stark. He has more money than Batman. Mm. He essentially has an entire nation's, the richest nation on Earth's entire treasury behind him. So
right.
He sort of has the rich man powers as well. I knew the character was always sort of steeped in Black empowerment. But, you know, like I said, a lot of the backstory, like a lot of the side characters didn't really know. I knew... Andy Serkis, oh. I knew his character, who's very different in the comics than the movie. This is definitely...
Ulysses Klaue?
Klaue.
Yeah,
Ulysses Klaue. I think in the comics, he just goes by the name Klaue, and he's got, like, a weird robot face and a purple diaper. So they've definitely grounded that character a lot.
But not much else. I'll say this about, you know, just getting into the movie itself. I was really taken aback by how sci-fi this was and how pulpy it got. Like, I thought, like, again, not knowing anything, I thought, like, it would be, like, this kind of jungle guerrilla warfare kind of thing, like, you know, the genre within a genre Marvel thing that they do. I thought it would be this kind of jungle warfare kind of like guerrilla style. Like there's one scene like that in this movie where he's hiding in a tree and whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought that would
this is
be
more on
movie.
Par with like Thor.
Yeah. Like this is like it's, you know, hidden cities and everything. This is as out there as anything in the Thor movies. And it's very brightly colored, and there's lots of, you know, crazy production design, and these spaceships and stuff that look like they came right out of Star Trek.
I will say, I think this is one of the best art designed Marvel movies. Like the character design, the costumes, the scene, the settings are so cool looking. Like visually, it's from a designer standpoint, awesome.
Well, I have a couple criticisms about that. Actually, I like the concepts, but I think sometimes the way they're filmed, and this might be a Ryan Coogler issue, or this might be a, you know, just some things look weird off the page, kind of thing. But there are some moments where it starts to feel a little bit like a Halloween party, or it starts to feel a little overly costumed and a little kind of campy at times.
Nah. I have plenty of criticisms about this movie, but that's not one of them. I loved the art design. I mean, this is the Marvel universe. Like, I think Black Panther's kind of a hard sell as a character. And he's like Iron Man, like the Guardians of the Galaxy. He wouldn't exist on the big screen if Marvel had always had the rights to, like, their sort of A-list characters.
Yeah.
And so he is one of those characters that is like, well, we'll take this character with this really rich backstory, and we're going to make him A-list. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of been doing that in the comics for a little while, which I appreciate.
Yeah, and I think there's always room to update your characters and to find a new context for them and that kind of stuff. And, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is pretty much, you know, that's our mission statement.
And I mean, I think we'd be pretty remiss not to mention the cultural impact of a character like this.
For sure.
You know, underrepresented Black people, people of color in general can relate to this character in a way they might not be able to relate to someone like Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Similar, and we're seeing a similar fan reaction that we saw to Wonder Woman. And that is something that I really like. That really excites me to see whole other groups of people who might not even be into Marvel be turned into a character because he actually means something to them. I think that's super cool.
Absolutely. And I'll say this off the bat before we get into the nitty gritty of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
The reasons why a person of color will like this movie is a lot more interesting than the reasons I maybe didn't care for everything.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that to discredit whatever I'm going to say. What I'm saying is that its overall impact is almost a separate entity from the movie itself. For instance, I was helping a customer. There was an African-American family, a few kids and a mother, and they were buying a bunch of treats to go take into the movie. And I said, oh, well, what are you going to go see? Already knowing the answer. And they're like, oh, we're going to go see Black Panther. And I'm like, oh, cool. And then without me even like prodding or saying any more, I was just, you know, ringing in their items. One of the younger kids said, yeah, how often do you see a superhero movie with nothing but black people in it? And I said,
yeah,
you're absolutely correct.
Yeah. I mean, I loved everything about this movie on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I love the cast. I love that it's predominantly black-centric. It's really cool to see people's reaction to this movie and embrace it.
Mm-hmm. And that it did so well. I mean, it's also like a very non-competitive season as far as, like, if you drop a big Marvel movie in February, of course it's going to make a big splash.
Sure, but you know, I mean, I also think it's intentional, not just because Infinity War comes out in like May and the new Ant-Man comes out in like July or something. Mm-hmm. You know, so they have to fit their movies in, but normally they have a November release. So I don't think it's any accident that they released it in Black History Month.
Oh no, I'm sure not. Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of a testing the water. We've been seeing like blockbuster season starting earlier and earlier. Now there's kind of recently they'll start having some slightly bigger movies, some buzzier movies, sort of at the end of March or early April. Now I think Marvel, Disney, they're kind of testing out February.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's working. Right. So yeah, so let's talk about the movie itself. Sure. I really liked the first two thirds of this movie. I thought were really cool, and I was totally on board. And then there's sort of a plot twist.
Okay.
And to me it's not the twist itself, but it's the amount of time I think it suffers from the same thing that a lot of Marvel movies suffer from, and that's a kind of a boring third act.
Right. Where it's just about like set piece, set piece, set piece, fight, fight, fight.
Yeah, and in general, I didn't think the action was as good in this or as interesting as some of the other Marvel movies. Like, Patrick kind of mentioned it, like referencing the sort of rubbery
CGI
way. Yeah, that he looks like when he's flipping from cars. Like, I think the character looked a little like the way the character moved and fought was a little cooler in Civil War. Mm-hmm. It was a little more Panther-ish. Whereas in this, it felt like there were parts where he's like jumping from car to car, and it sort of has that like very Gumby-ish CGI stuff. So some of the action felt a little. It also felt like some of the action was a little slowed down to me. I don't know if you caught that,
like ramped,
like a sort of half speed, or you know what I mean, like at rehearsal speed.
That's interesting. Well. Oh yeah, I think some of the hand-to-hand combat, especially there's some of the stuff I'm going to be talking about. Ryan Coogler, the director, who's a director I like. He did the film Fruitvale Station, which is also starring Michael B. Jordan, which was about like the untimely death of a young man by the police. It was based on a true story in Oakland, and then he also did his follow-up to that, his kind of like foray into the studio system, was with Creed, which was a sort of spin-off of the Rocky movies, also starring Michael B. Jordan, which I thought really married his kind of independent interests with a studio vision. And I thought did so really well and really seamlessly here. And I don't say this a lot when it comes to like Marvel picking up smaller directors to do larger projects. Obviously, Taika Waititi and we've seen a lot. I think I can feel it more here. The jump from the size of movie he's used to doing to this. I think there's a lot of times when I'm like, this scene doesn't need this many close-ups. Or this fight scene is really like being saved in editing, and I can tell that they're chopping it up to make it feel like there's more impact than there actually is.
Yes, and that's what I'm talking in.
I think it's just a matter of maybe it had to do with preparation time that he had. Maybe it had to do with
sensibilities
as a director that something that we can't even like discuss without him being in the room. I'm not sure. All I know is that there was some, the integration of CGI and then the way he uses his camera sometimes was, I felt like wasn't utilizing the budget.
I agree. And that's kind of what I'm talking about with like some of the action didn't work for me and stuff. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think the action is one of the sort of least important parts of this movie.
Yes.
I think this is one of the most character-driven Marvel movies we've seen. Like, T'Challa has a very clear point of view. I don't know a lot about Black Panther, but ever since his appearance in Civil War, I was like, fuck yeah, like, give me some more of this guy. And he's almost overshadowed here by his supporting cast. There's like, I loved his supporting cast. Lupita Nyong'o was great. Letitia Wright as Shuri. Oh, she was so good.
Was that his like kind of Q weapons invention girl?
Yeah. His little sister.
Right. Yeah.
She was one of the highlights for me.
Daniel Kaluuya shows up in here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was so stoked to see him.
Mm-hmm. And he had a really interesting character.
Exactly. They don't waste a good actor on a sort of a bit part like Marvel typically does. Even, you know, Sterling K. Brown has a small but meaty role.
Mm-hmm.
And Winston Duke as M'Baku sort of stole every scene he was in.
Angela Bassett returns from the depths of wherever she was, like, you know.
Yeah, and not to mention Michael B. Jordan. Holy shit. He was so good.
He was. Now, this is sort of both the character stuff, I think, is both indicative of the stuff I liked about the movie and didn't like at the same time. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is that I think there's a lot of great characters here. And there's a lot of interesting dynamics between the characters, especially sort of the mirror dynamics between Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa. Yeah. You know, their stories kind of run parallel, and there's a lot of interesting things there.
And I think it's worth bringing up that is something that Marvel Studios tends to do
right. With
their heroes and villains. They tend to run parallel in the first movie. Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the most effective cases of that, though.
Well, and the reason is because the movie is to its credit, it's discussing a lot of ideological ideas.
Yes. And they have very specific philosophical points of view.
Yes.
It's not just one of them is using this to make money or whatever.
Right, or wants to take over the world or feels jilted or whatever. Well, he does feel jilted, but for reasons you can actually sympathize with.
Relate and compel, yeah.
Right. However, I don't think the screenplay doesn't totally utilize that. It's in there enough for me to recognize it. But I feel like I have to extrapolate to the point where I'm like, oh, okay, so this is an idea that they're kind of talking about. Whereas I wish that the movie, like, to me, that's the dramatic juice of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's really only, it's like this flashback kind of prologue, and then it kind of gets into it towards the end. But they could have been running that drama throughout the whole movie, and they don't really.
So that brings up one of my sort of beefs with the movie, and that is that Michael B. Jordan, Killmonger's plan doesn't make any goddamn sense. And that frustrated me because he's introduced really cool. He's sort of this mysterious character, and they're withholding, and then we know something's going on with him, and then once they reveal the character stuff, which is interesting and really good, I'm like, oh wait, his plan is like bonkers.
If we want to get into it, his essential worldview, or the philosophical argument that the movie's having, is this sort of isolationist point of view. And this isn't even necessarily a black thing. You can talk about this with American politics right the fuck now. This sort of isolationist point of view. Do we bring everybody home? Do we decrease war? Do we take care of our own?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we intervene? You know, do we take care of potential threats before it comes to us? And that is essentially the, you know, the philosophical argument that Wakanda and all of these different tribes, specifically Daniel Kaluuya's character, who has a much more, I guess, sort of would be sort of the, I guess, Republican point of view of a more sort of war hawkish point of view. Versus
war dogs in this case.
Versus T'Challa and, you know, the prosperity that the country's seen. They sort of come to an interesting middle ground at the end, which,
yeah,
again, ideologically, well, see, I'm like, okay, I get your argument about, you know, sort of sharing the technology and sort of this utopian charitable way, but I also don't see how this really solves the issue of wanting to stay a secret and things like that. So,
I mean, that's one of the things I really liked about this movie was seeing a main character who is willing to sort of concede his ideology, but without sacrificing it, if that makes sense.
Right.
That's not what I'm talking about when I say Killmonger's plan doesn't make sense. Like, once he comes to Wakanda, that makes sense. It's everything leading up to that point that I'm like,
Oh,
this is just to have a cool scene.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And well, you know.
And that was a little frustrating because I really liked
Andy Serkis
as Ulysses Klaue.
Andy Serkis is a terrific fucking actor, and I feel like people just sort of see him as the motion capture guy.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons he's so good at motion capture is because he's so expressive with his face and body. And I really liked Eric Killmonger's and Ulysses Klaue's sort of interaction together. And then there's this twist that I'm like, oh, well, then what was the point of all of this other stuff? You know what I mean?
There's some weird there's some weird plotting in this movie. And I think that it has, and the screenplay in general is a little messy. And there is a lot of like, we're going to do this scene just so we can get to this other scene. Like there's this whole kind of like mission that takes place in Seoul, South Korea, that once we get to the end of the movie, you realize it's like, it was just there to be cool. Like that's the only reason that scene was there is because it had been a while since we had some action and we needed it.
And I will say though, to the film's credit, that was a really cool scene.
It's really cool.
I mean, this movie has some great shit going on. Like it's one part sci-fi Lion King,
sure,
mixed with Black James Bond, mixed with a little bit of, you know, like I said, a little bit of Thor, and you know, plus some Marvel superhero stuff,
right?
I get why people are so excited about this movie. There was just like something about it didn't completely click for me.
I would actually say, like, you know, it does all of those things, but it none of that, like, I think totally gels. Like, I always feel like we're kind of jumping from genre to genre without, like, any connective tissue. And
no, I didn't feel that. I don't know. I felt like everything sort of worked on the genre levels for me.
Okay.
It was more just, like I said, some of the jarring plot elements, and I was just a little disappointed by some of the action because it just, some of it was a little, like I said, a little boring to me, a little safe. I mean, there were some cool moments, but overall the action sequences were just sort of big and loud and messy, especially the end. That was where it really started to catch up to
me. It's sort of Battle of the Five Armies and
No, that I thought was pretty cool. It was like once they fall down the train area, I was like, oh, okay, this is like superhero movie by the numbers, sorta.
Yeah.
And it was like all the other stuff that I was liking more. Like I actually really liked the battle sequence that was raging on and
at this point with superhero films, with superhero films, particularly Marvel films, I'm appreciative of any third act, you know, over climax.
Yeah, that isn't that like a big
space laser.
Blue space laser.
Yeah, that isn't a space laser blowing, and then you know, giant buildings crumbling, and you know, somebody in a control room screaming at the top of their lungs.
Like, yeah, I agree, but I mean, we still had a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Martin Freeman's character at the end is literally doing that. So that's what I mean. Like, I think that's what frustrated me is I'm starting to feel the superhero fatigue a little bit. And when this movie is acting like a superhero movie, oh, it's sort of the most boring.
Well, I would also have to agree with Patrick's assessment that it's far too long. You know, it's 2:15. Yeah. I think this could have easily been 1:40. There's a lot of scenes. There's a lot of scenes that don't need to be there, and there's a lot of scenes where that go over exposition that you could kind of take care of in other ways.
Especially some of the flashback stuff. I think it gets sort of the origins of Eric Killmonger. I think gets a little beaten to death,
and not at the same time though. Like my biggest complaint with it isn't necessarily the genre stuff, though I think it's a little messy sometimes. Like, a lot of the production element of it in general is a little slapdash. But I can forgive all that if I felt that the dramatic tension was always holding my attention. And it kind of doesn't. Like, I get that there's this ideological kind of questioning that's happening that's cool when they decide to get to it, and I think that you have such a great character in Michael B. Jordan and this great argument that he has, that I feel like the movie is maybe a little too afraid to get us too close to his position on it. Like,
I can kind of see what you're saying. I don't know.
If there had been a stronger B plot with him that ran parallel the whole movie, then I think that there could have been an interesting back and forth there.
I agree. I think that could have been dealt with. I don't know. I don't know, man. I really did like it.
Mm-hmm.
I posted on Twitter that it was fine.
Right.
And I got some fun comments. And I do, if anybody is listening to this, I do want to emphasize, I did enjoy it. I really did like it. And what's frustrating to me was it was a really good movie, but I thought it could have been as amazing and revolutionary as like a lot of the critical acclaim is giving it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and maybe it's just for the sheer fact that we always do these reviews about a week after the fact.
Yeah.
That we have a more kind of bird's eye view of the not only the film, but also the cultural context and the critical reception, and so we're always kind of like reviewing everything involved with the movie rather than just the movie itself. Like, we didn't, you know, see a screening of this 2 months before it came out.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say also that I think it still holds up in the Marvel canon.
Sure.
And I think that the representation it does provide is
important,
making it sort of critic proof, which I think is fine. You know, maybe I didn't enjoy it as much as, you know, as some black audiences might have. And I think that's okay. You know what I mean? I think it's okay. Black audiences are finally getting a decent superhero that's not Steel or, you know what I mean? Like, that is actually representing them in a really cool way. So I...
Well, in a lot more of a specific way, because, you know, people... I mean...
Yes.
People could point to Blade, or people could point to other things, but you know, that character was more or less incidentally black. Whereas this movie's about that.
And he's not, you know, he's not a king of a prosperous super country. Like fucking, I want to move to Wakanda. You know what I mean? so I get the sort of escapist fantasy that it provides. And I think that's more important than whatever sort of technical quibbles I had with the movie.
Right. That's why I was saying at the beginning of the review that whatever reasons I might not like the movie is far less interesting than the reasons why a person of color would like it.
Yes. And I think, and honestly, I want to see it again. because I want to see it from the, you know, when I saw it was even later than I normally see these movies. Normally I try to, especially the Marvel stuff, I try to get to it like opening night.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this was a few days after the critical reception was like on overload.
Right.
You know, so I think maybe a second viewing with my expectations tempered a little bit might help. You know, I'm definitely going to buy it when it comes out on Blu-ray and add it to my collection. And I think, you know, I'm really excited to see where this character goes.
Yeah, like what I would say about it altogether is I did like it. I had a lot of fun watching it, but there's definitely room for improvement. And yes. And honestly, I think Coogler, you know, if they choose him again for the next installment, if they do a sequel, I think
I'm sure they will.
I think that he will have a lot better of an idea of like where to start technically with a film like
this. I think it's going to be. I actually sort of view this movie on the. I sort of because everybody does their Marvel rankings now that there's enough movies to rank.
Right, more than enough.
To me. What?
So there's more than enough. There's probably about as many Marvel movies as there is Bond movies.
Yeah, about. To me, this is somewhere. Like, I felt kind of similar to this as I did Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm.
I think I said that to a customer the other day who was asking me about it. Like, he was like trying to get me to rank it on a number scale. It's like I liked it about as much as Doctor Strange. Maybe about as much as Ant-Man. Maybe a little more.
Yeah, like to me, and it has some of those origin movie issues. Ooh. That I'm totally origin movie fatigue. It does make me a little hesitant for Captain Marvel whenever it comes out, because I'm like, we understand the Marvel universe at this point,
right?
And luckily this movie wasn't, you know, this was more of a Black Panther origin as the king, right, versus superhero, which was nice.
Which is a different kind of thing. And I understand that, you know, there's a lot of world building that goes on into this because it is such a crazy world.
Yeah.
So you do got to spend a lot of time on that. And I think they handle that pretty well. Yeah, I think for me, I just wish it had a slightly stronger center of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. All right, letter grade.
B minus.
That's what I originally felt, but I think it's in time, like thinking about it, I think it's gone up to a B plus for me.
Okay.
Because it, you know what? It's fucking cool. Like, it's a cool looking movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know me, I'm a sucker for cool.
Yeah, it has a really cool cast, and yeah, there's a lot of reasons to like it. Okay, let's get into the Cloverfield Paradox.
Jesus Christ, I don't even want to talk about this.
I guess I'm setting this one up.
Yeah, go for it.
So,
I hate that we have to waste time talking about this because I wasted so much time watching it.
Well, there would be no, that would be even like worse. So you watch this and didn't even have like the outlet to talk about it. Really, you watch it, would be watching it in vain. Okay. So
yeah. Good luck summing this up, by the way. Good luck.
This is directed by Julius Ona, and it was co-written by Oren Uziel. This was originally written as a screenplay called The God Particle, which I remember back in my, trade newspaper days, there were some talks about this movie. I remember seeing that title, The God Particle. But it was acquired by J.J. Abrams and Bad Robot and sometime during production, it became a part of the Cloverfield franchise, which seems to now be sort of this almost Twilight Zone, Outer Limits style anthology franchise, which every movie, you know, has very loose connections to the original Cloverfield that came out in 2008, 2009. But they sort of get to be their own sort of sci-fi fantasy adventure, which is cool. I actually like that concept a lot. This is kind of like what John Carpenter originally envisioned for the Halloween franchise before it became the Michael Myers show.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen 10 Cloverfield Lane.
10 Cloverfield Lane is actually a really good movie until the third act when it shits the bed.
Mm,
but I actually even saying that, I would definitely recommend watching it, because especially for the performances.
Sure.
And I think the original Cloverfield is, like, actually, I would say, super underrated, even though it was a hugely successful movie and, like, pushed the, like, found footage thing in a big way. I think it's actually sort of culturally relevant, because it was, it kind of did for 9/11 paranoia what the original Godzilla did for the nuclear paranoia.
This
movie is not any of those things. This is...
No, you haven't even summed up the batshit plot.
Okay, so there's a space station. This takes place in the future. A future in which we're on the brink of global annihilation and war. There's an energy crisis. All these different sort of world superpowers are trying to... acquire whatever energy is left on the Earth. So they send a bunch of people into space for this last ditch effort to use a giant super collider to create enough energy that they can start to utilize the technology back on Earth. But they have to test it in space because it's potentially very, very dangerous. And there's all this talk about what if it, you know, rips a hole in the space-time continuum, and then demons, like, pop out, and we see this, like, kind of Alex Jonesian character on a TV screen sort of talking about that. And that's kind of what happens. So they shoot the giant laser, and all of a sudden their ship is zapped onto the other side of the sun. And they're missing people, and they're finding weird people who, in the circuitry of the walls, that they've never met before, who claim to know them. Arms are writing secret messages by themselves. Cats and dogs living together, mass hysteria. And it's sort of a space sci-fi horror thriller. And it's, for the most part, really bad. This is a really bad movie. And it doesn't have to be. You know, based upon the premise that I said, there's a lot of interesting ideas there. You could do a lot with that. And what they did with that is make an even shittier version of Event Horizon, which is already a pretty shitty movie.
This movie is one of the most frustrating withholding movies I've ever seen. I mean, even like... You summed up the plot, and I'm just like, yeah, I guess technically you're right about all of those things, but the movie never lets you in on what's going on, like, at all, until the third act, which is just an exposition dump that makes no sense. This movie is bad. Oh, my God. Oh, fuck. I hated this movie. I hated it. It was just like... So we're introduced to these fucking scientist characters who are in space for some reason. And they're all from different countries for some reason. And yet they all distrust each other for some reason. And that never plays out in any interesting or exciting ways. And then this giant something happens, and then nonsense starts happening. Utter nonsense.
We should mention this cast, because it's actually fairly impressive. You have David Oyelowo, Daniel Brühl, John Ortiz, Chris O'Dowd. You know, these big character actors who should be able to bring a lot of different flavors and in interesting interactions, completely wasted. The main character, Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Hold on for a second. There's a giant, terrifying spider I have to murder.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus. It's looking at me. Hold on. I need to get up. Fly swatter or something. Oh, Jesus, where'd it go? Oh, no. I don't like this at all. There you are, you son of a bitch.
Did you take care of that?
Yeah. We have these, like, weird giant spiders that live in our house sometimes, and it was scarier than the Cloverfield Paradox. I think it's worth mentioning that this movie is a horror movie, technically, but It is not thrilling. It is not tense. Mm-hmm. Because you never know what's going on. There's no grounding point for this movie. If you're going to have all these great character actors, maybe let's give them some character. Mm-hmm. Let's give them some backstory. Sure, that could be something that we hang this crazy premise around.
Right.
Or if you're going to have...
So we know two things about the characters going into the movie. We know that...
We know they're foreign. They're all from different countries.
They want to, like, save the Earth. But Gugu Mbatha-Raw, or Hamilton, as she's known in the movie, we know that she lost her family at some point and has issues about that.
Do we know that?
Yeah.
Did we know that?
She's, like, staring at screens and, like, photos of a family, like, longingly crying and, like, touching the screen.
Oh, but but that's, like, a reveal. I thought the whole time that she just missed them because she was in space.
I mean, yeah, something to that effect. Something about her and family. And we know that Chris O'Dowd is the funny one.
I guess. Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, this movie's so withholding. There's, like, this emotional backstory for the main character that the audience doesn't know until it's like, oh, movie's up, movie's over. Mm-hmm. Like, and the reveal of that was so sloppy and gross. I hated this movie.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I didn't like it at all. But I feel like to hate it is to put more energy into having an opinion about it than the movie had in making it.
Yeah.
It's just schlock. Like, it's just bad sci-fi schlock. This is the type of thing that would have been directed DVD in the late 90s.
Yeah, this is like a sci-fi original before they started trying to rebrand themselves with, like, good content. Like, it's just not good at all. It's not quality.
No, it's and I wonder, like, you know, it being sort of part of the Cloverfield thing. Because the other thing we didn't mention is that there was this big marketing push behind the movie to release the ad for the movie during the Super Bowl the same mm-hmm. day that it was released on Netflix, which I think is maybe the first time something like that's been done where you see the ad and at the end of the ad says, now available on Netflix to watch.
Yeah,
this thing you just heard about, go ahead and watch it.
The Beyonce dropped it.
Yeah. Which, you know, caught our attention. Plus, I was sort of invested in the Cloverfield project. But
after this, I'm not.
It would depend. You know, I don't, you know, different franchises have the good ones and the bad ones or whatever.
It's true. And if, you know, since it is kind of an anthology series, that, you know, I'm sure the next one can have no connection to
absolutely.
This.
Absolutely. It could be a completely different thing. And they, you know, it could hopefully have a better budget because I felt a lot of budgetary constraints here.
I mean, you can do a space thriller with low budget. My problem was nothing made any goddamn sense, and it was through the lens of characters that I didn't give a shit about.
I mean, those two things are a problem.
Like, the stuff that's supposed to be scary, I'm like, okay, why is this happening? What does this even mean?
Because in this parallel universe, walls can suck up people for some reason.
Right? And then the arm comes back and it starts writing a secret message for some reason.
Because in this parallel universe, arms are sentient.
Are they?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like,
that's what I mean. This movie.
If this were like something more sort of supernatural, like Event Horizon, which. It says something that's my reference point as far as the good version of this idea. Because again, I'm not an Event Horizon person. I think that movie's like highly overrated. But like at least in that movie, they went through a vortex to hell. So in hell, you know, the rules of reality can be a lot more fluid and surreal. Here, all we know is that it's just a parallel universe. Why are arms leaving secret clues?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And this movie raises a lot of questions and never answers any of them.
Because it doesn't have answers.
Exactly. It's not done in the typical sort of bad robot way either, where, you know, at least it's cool.
Right. Or there's some intrigue or there's like some sort of tension building with it or anything. It's just...
Yeah, it's like, They don't even care that this fucking arm comes out of nowhere and is writing secret messages. They're just like, oh, that's my arm. Weird. Let's put it in a box. Okay, let's never think about it again until the very end of the movie. And then we'll show it again, but it won't do anything. Mm-hmm. Another thing that's frustrating is there's sort of this B storyline with that main character Hamilton's husband, mm-hmm. Who's stuck on Earth, and all this shit is going down, but you don't know that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this scene where he runs to this, he's like trying to go to the hospital, and he finds this girl, and then. There's like this shadow moving in the background, and I was like, oh, cool. There's, you know, giant monster stuff. And then the next thing we know, he's like in a bunker freaking out. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay. like, what's going on that you're freaking out about? And then, you know, it does this stinger at the end of the movie, which is like the Cloverfield connection.
Right.
And it's so tacked on. Mm-hmm. And lazy, and I'm like, oh, that's okay, that's it, that's the thing we were running from, I guess. Like this, it just, stuff keeps happening, and the movie wants you to think the stakes are raising. But
well, I would guarantee that the original screenplay, the God Particle screenplay, had none of that B plot. Because every time it enters, which I'm not saying like they would have saved the movie to get rid of it, but every time they cut to that, it's jarring as fuck.
Oh, yeah. And
breaks up whatever story there was.
Are we going to talk about the Russian guy who you're meant to think is like a bad dude and then he explodes in worms for no reason? Even though he's able to live with massive amounts of worms in his body for like a day.
I guess, yeah. That was just like, hey, let's rip off Alien for a second.
Right?
That's all this movie is. It's just like, oh, hey, you know what was a cool movie? Event Horizon, I guess. You know what was a cool movie? Sunshine. You know what was a cool movie? Alien. It's like, I get it. You've seen...
Have they, though?
Well, maybe they read the premises somewhere. Like,
yeah.
They saw some trailers to movie. Those movies and decided to do their version of it.
This was a really bad movie, and this is like C level.
C as in like as opposed to a B movie, or like that's your letter grade, because I would give it a D.
Oh, no. C as in like a B movie, this is a C movie. Right. No, letter grade. This is an F for me. Ooh. Straight up F. Like, there was nothing I cared about. Ooh. Nothing even looked cool. There was nothing holding on me into this. And that is a total fail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just put... I've seen a lot of bad sci-fi in my days. This reminded me a lot of, like, movies like Pandorum or... what was that one? Europa Report? Which again had like this weird festival buzz, and then when I saw it, I was like, "This is just shitty."
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've seen bad sci-fi too. So
it didn't offend me, I guess, in the same way it did you. I just thought like, "Oh, it's just schlock. Okay, nothing to see here, folks."
But that's the thing that frustrated me was there was literally nothing to see. Like, at least it could have been. I'm a lot more forgiving of a bad movie if it's at least, like, scary or whatever it's setting out to do.
Sure, I like fun bad movies. I even like schlock if there's, like, some weird element to it that I can kind of get behind. But yeah,
this had
there's no specificity, there's no vision, it's just kind of... again, and we've said this a lot about these Netflix originals, it just feels like content.
Yeah, exactly, and... I think Netflix really needs to
get it together.
Start. Yeah. If they're going to be the new system,
you're like, sullying let's start, your brand.
Yeah. Let's start producing some stuff that's worth watching. Uh-huh.
You can't just slap Cloverfield on it and expect us to think it's a good movie just because of that.
Well, apparently they can because it probably made a lot of money.
I don't know if it did. I don't even know how they make money.
I don't know how that works either.
Okay, so don't watch that.
Yeah, don't bother.
But that's the end of the show. And thank you, Patrick, for sending in your thoughts, the voice message for Black Panther. If anybody wants to do that, if you have a way of recording yourself, either with your iPhone or with a microphone, I know we have a lot of podcasters who listen. You're welcome to do that. You know, want to send in, like, I think, you know, we had Mike Fallick do that for Star Wars. So if anybody wants to send in something that's, you know, relatively short, 4 to 5 minutes or less, it would be optimal. You can do that, or you can send a regular email and we can read it on air at jabberingthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter, Twitter at Jabber Podcast and facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can follow me on Twitter individually at BC Cassidy. Where do they find you?
Follow me on Twitter at Keith Foster Kid. Follow me on Instagram at Keith Foster Kid. You can find me on Facebook too. Check out my website, www.keithfosterkid.com.
And that's where all your live events and stuff, and you have a calendar, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't have much coming up right now, but, yeah, all of it gets posted on there. So.
Cool. You can also find us and stream us at Stitcher Radio, iTunes, Player.fm, Google Play, and the Windows Podcast Network. And you should be checking out our friends who also do podcasts, the ones I just mentioned, Patrick at Make Dad Read Comics and Almost Educational, Rod and Denise at The Listening Party. Rod, I promise we'll get to The Discovery next week. It's going to happen.
I watched it.
Yeah, so we're halfway there. So yeah, listen to them at The Listening Party and Denise over at Mascot Diaries. You can also check out Mike Fallick over at Let's Start a Cult, Bill and Brian at the Great Albums Podcast, and...
And I'll give a shout out to the Adamant Podcast. I think he'll let us know on a scale of 1 to 10 how racist we may or may not have been reviewing Black Panther. Well, that's fine. So let us know how we did. And then also listen to Blizzlet. I think that's the name of it. Blizzlet.
Mm-hmm. And that's the episode. That's the show.
Wakanda Forever.